Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
It's one thing to drive around with a Jesus or Christian fish bumper sticker on your car, but it's another thing entirely to reach out to those doing life tough and the poor of the world. My next guest got so sick of the gap between the two and even angry with himself that he quit his job as a youth pastor, emptied his bank account, and then went travelling deep into Africa to tell the Maasai people about Jesus. Caleb Bislow has been to some of the most despised, dangerous, and darkest places in the world to engage people with Christian faith. Caleb now runs a missionary organization called Unusual Soldiers to train and equip people to follow in his footsteps. He's just also written a book called Dangerous, which Bear Grylls says is for aspiring heroes, about real heroes, by a quiet hero, who is Caleb Bislow. Welcome to Open House, Caleb.
Well, thank you for having me, Lee.
It's great to have you. Thank you so much for your time. Tell us about your work first, Caleb, as a youth pastor. How'd you get into that field and why?
Well, I actually went to college to be a graphic designer, and I was halfway into college. The vice president asked me if I had ever considered youth ministry, and he hooked me up with an internship, and that summer internship changed my life. I got the ministry bug, and really, there was no turning back after that. I knew I wanted to be involved in some kind of ministry. Didn't know how my somewhat dangerous ambitions would fit into that later down the road, but it's been a wild ride.
Yes. What was the attraction? What hit your buttons about doing that kind of work?
I really was a pretty quiet kid in high school, and I never saw myself as being able to do something like that. But that summer internship, I saw God use me. I spoke in front of a crowd for the first time, and people were blessed by it, and I'd always been told, when I was younger, that I was a mute, that I was very timid and quiet, and so my box was beginning to break.
How long was it before you started to feel a sense of frustration about what you were doing, and that gap that I spoke about before?
Well, I went into full-time youth ministry then after I graduated college, and I really had a heart for the world, and I felt like a lot of times I was, I still loved ministry, I loved students, but my heart began to just look outside the windows of the church, and I realized I wasn't getting out as much as I would like to be with more outside people outside the church. And eventually, about 8 years into youth ministry, that's when I emptied our bank account, and my wife, bless her heart, let me fly over to Africa to start ministering to the Maasai tribe there.
And it was, as I said before, the bumper sticker that got you. Take us through how that confronted you and how you felt.
When I got to Africa, there's many bumper stickers. You see Jesus is everywhere, in Kenya especially, where I had gone. And as I met my translator, his name was Simon, we were headed out to the bush, and I'd see all these Jesus bumper stickers. And I remember we headed out to the bush for about 2 hours and about a two-hour hike after that. And we had found people that had never heard the gospel before. And it just kind of grieved me that there were so many people, Christians, that close to them that had not gone out and shared the gospel with them, and it's really put a heart in me to try to mobilize people and encourage people to go and to make disciples of people around them and beyond.
You'd also got angry at yourself. Why was that?
Yeah, I think, there was a great moment. The first village I spoke to, I thought I did something wrong almost, because everybody there responded to Christ, I asked my translator, it was something wrong, why did were they just raising their hands? Is this real? And he just affirmed me it was real. And, a year later, a church was there, so I discovered it was real. But the frustration in that moment was just that I felt like these people were waiting to hear the gospel. I couldn't believe that all these people were waiting. And I've seen that in country after country I've gone to. It's as if people are waiting. And I think we're often so afraid to go to them. And what we don't realize is they're just waiting to hear the good news.
It seems like this was a continual unfolding journey for you. When you emptied your bank account, did you have any kind of plan?
No, I didn't really have any plan. When I first went to Africa, I'd tell people I took a backpack, a Bible, and a burden, and just a prayer that God would reveal himself to me in a new way. And I also, when I went to some of those villages, I remember just saying, I was born for this. I was created for this. And that was really the first time I discovered what I felt like my true calling was to begin to go into these dark, dangerous, or despised places.
But there was also a great gap between where you'd been brought up in the United States, your worthy and noble job as a youth pastor, and going into some of these deep, dark, and as you say, despised places of Africa. How do you bridge that kind of gap?
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out as a youth pastor, and that's one of the reasons I had to leave. You know, as a youth pastor, I remember going on youth group trips, and I'd pick up hitchhikers on the way with all my youth kids, and that just didn't sit well with the parents. And I knew God was calling me to something different, and I had a journal that I kept during my youth pastor years, and I drew a picture of me kind of standing on a cliff, and beyond the cliff I wrote the word unusual soldiers, and I felt like God was calling me at some point to start a ministry entitled that, and I didn't know what that looked like, but a few years into youth ministry, he gave me the green light to make the jump, I guess.
Can you describe how you ended up connecting so effectively with people in those places in Africa?
Yeah, that was one of my biggest fears going into it because, like I said, I was an art major at first and became a youth pastor. And kind of a long story, you know, I tried to go through missions agencies at first, and that did not work out. And then some lady just emailed me, and she was a missionary, but I didn't know her, and she connected me with a translator. When I flew to Africa, I just met this stranger who was a translator. He was a Maasai man, and he became, you know, is one of my closest friends today. And so that's kind of where it started. And now as I've gone other places, if I can't find contacts, I've just noticed that even if I fly into a country, God seems to always provide the right people in the right places. So I don't always need a perfect plan anymore to go into some of those areas. What I just began to study was a lot about the Maasai or about different places I've gone, about different tribal groups. And I've just tried to find the bridges. For instance, the Maasai, they sacrifice white lambs and to their god. And I thought, wow, that's perfect. I can't believe that they look for the purest white lamb to sacrifice. So that was one of the bridges that I used with the Maasai in sharing the gospel with them. And I've noticed that in cultures all over the world, there seems to be these bridges that God has set up for us where we can really bridge the gap.
And the Christian story, at the end of the day, is really a universal one, no matter the language, no matter the culture.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a story of hope. It's what people are desperately looking for.
So when you came up with that term, unusual soldiers, what did you think that meant in your mind, and how did that journey unfold to the extent that it became a reality?
When I was traveling once in Arkansas, I was considering being a part of a church planting team. And an older gentleman was down there, and he heard that about the church planters, and he called all of them, and he called myself unusual soldiers. And when he said that, I didn't know what that was, but I knew in that moment, it was like he branded my heart with a mission. And I knew in that moment, that's what I wanted to strive to be my whole life. And I'm not even brave enough to call myself one, but that's what I want to strive to be for Christ, is just a man who's committed to a cause and ready to risk for him. And, you know, it became a youth group program as I was a youth pastor. But then after I jumped off the cliff and went into kind of this full-time ministry of raising up unusual soldiers, this is where I really found my truest purpose of rising up just these people that have a willingness and a love and a humility just to risk for Christ, to try to launch movements for him.
As it's grown and as these people have come in, what have they meant to you, Caleb?
They mean the world to me, and, you know, I love, my book has a lot of my stories in it, but I've told somebody, I hope that, actually somebody asked me, when are you going to write the sequel, and I said, when you do, because my heart is that this book launches people forward and that they begin to have their own God stories of them launching movements, and that's my greatest feedback. That's what I love to hear, is people step out and they begin to discover that God can use them in mighty and powerful ways too.
As I said, the book is entitled Dangerous. Is it only the physical danger that you write about?
No, it's really about taking the hope of Christ, really to specifically the dark places, which are places that have not heard of Christ, maybe a restricted place. Dangerous places could be more of the physical danger, but also despised places that are often marginalized or discriminated against. So there's kind of three categories that the book hits.
Is there one particular place that best illustrates how dangerous, how despised it got for you?
Well, there's a lot of stories that come to mind, and the first one that comes to mind is, you know, we go into red light districts at times. Wherever we're told not to go, sometimes we pray about it, and God leads us there. And we did go to a red light district once where people said it was dangerous, and we were told not to go there, especially after dark. And we went down, and we met some wonderful ladies. They were street workers, and God just moved in a miraculous way. They began to cry and open their hearts to us. One of the ladies recommitted her life to Christ and said, I cannot go back to this. I'm going to start going to church. And you know, everybody said it was dangerous, that they steal your bags down there and stuff. But most of these places I've gone, even in the Congo where they said it's a Holocaust, I've found some of the greatest people that are on the world today.
But you wouldn't underestimate or underrate the danger physically.
No, you have to always take it into high consideration, and that's one of the hardest things about me is when I take groups with me. It's easier for me to go alone, but when you start taking groups with you as you're training them, it's very difficult at times knowing that you could be putting their life in danger. So it is a very real thing, but the Lord has blessed thus far in protecting us.
Have you ever feared for your life, Caleb, as you've done this work?
Yeah, there's been a few times where I've been afraid. One was in Guatemala. We went into a prison, and the prison, just a few months before we got there, there was a gang rivalry where the inmates had beheaded each other and put their heads on stakes. Just a horrible, graphic thing, but we felt led to go in there. And as we went in, we were allowed to go into the solitary area where the hardest of the hardest criminals were at. And I was pretty scared, but I just since confirmed in my spirit that we were supposed to go there. And I remember looking at my friend saying, this could be it, just realizing that the consequences that this could be. But we went in there, and God moved among these men, and we were able to share hope with them, and they really respected our courage just to come in there and show them love, and had some great conversations with them about Christ.
If there are people listening, as I expect, who will feel in their own mind, yeah, I could be an unusual soldier, dangerous and fearful though it is, what kind of person best fits that description in your experience, Carl?
You know, it's not the Rambos necessarily. Okay. I've noticed that the Rambos that want to come with us, they're driven by themselves. They're real independent. They have a strong spirit, which I like, and God is using that with a guy in the Congo right now, and some people like that. But there's also a type of person that's a very humble person that doesn't believe that maybe they even have what it takes. And it seems like as you read through Scripture, that's the person God points out, says, I'm calling you to this great work, and it may be dangerous. And so the first thing I look for in people is that spirit of humility, and I think that's what God looks for too.
If there are those people wondering about that life and where to go and what to do, where should they head?
Well, the book, it might be a good place to start. You can find it at thedangerousbook.com, because at the back of the book is a list of ministries for dark places, dangerous places, and despised places. So really, I'm just trying to launch people there and show them a lot of ministry opportunities where they can get involved. So that may be a good place to start.
When you see Bear Grylls writing about this book and you, that it's for aspiring heroes, about real heroes, by a quiet hero, what does it do to you?
You know, I met Bear Grylls last year at a survival training course, and that just meant a lot to me that he would ask people to read this book and that he would see people of faith as heroes that really step out for a cause. It's been a huge blessing to have him get behind it.
I'm sure it is. Caleb Bislow, thank you so much indeed for your time. We'll put the link up to Dangerous and Unusual Soldiers on our Open House Community Facebook page. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lee. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.